I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate. The Ogallala Road, the new memoir by author Julene Bear, is a story about love and family. But it's also about the tremendous damage that irresponsible and short-sighted farming practices are doing to the western plains of the United States. In the book, Ms. Bear struggles to preserve the Bear family farm for the next generation, but she grapples with the ecological harm she causes as her farm pumps millions of gallons of water out of the rapidly depleting Ogallala Aquifer. I'm so happy to welcome Julene Bear to the Leonard Lopate Show to discuss her eye-opening and beautiful new book, The Ogallala Road, published by Penguin. Welcome, Julene.
Well, hello. Thank you.
And where are you calling in from today?
Manhattan, Kansas.
There is a Manhattan, Kansas.
There really is, and it's quite different, I assure you.
I can imagine. Where exactly is your family's farm, and how long was it in your family? Can you give me some of the history of this?
The farm was in western Kansas on the border of Colorado, and it was in our family for 100 years.
Mm-hmm. And
exactly 100 years, as a matter of fact.
And where is the Ogallala Aquifer? And maybe explain exactly what an aquifer is for those
aquifer.
Who are not aquifer aficionados.
Okay. Yes. The Ogallala Aquifer is an underground water source. It's huge. It extends all the way from southern South Dakota to north Texas. It underlies about 174,000 square miles. And it's not just a lake under the ground. It's saturated sands and gravels and rock. So it's like a giant sponge.
Mm-hmm. And is this the sole source of water for the farms in the area?
Yes, it is. It's the only source of water on most of the high plains in that entire area. All of the creeks and rivers in that area are fed by the Ogallala Aquifer mm-hmm. as well. And the irrigation practices are draining the creeks and rivers.
How does one measure how much water is remaining in an aquifer?
Well, actually, that's quite a challenging science, but recently the Kansas State University, which is here in Manhattan, Kansas, as a matter of fact, came out with a study saying that we have now used up 30% of the water in the aquifer in Kansas, and in another 50 years, there will be only 70%. We will have used 70%. And it varies from place to place. There are actually pockets of the aquifer in Texas and central Kansas that are already completely depleted.
So you, your father farmed this piece of land, and did you ever think you were going to be a farmer, that you were going to follow in his footsteps?
Well, interestingly, that was not really a possibility in my childhood because I was a girl. And I always envied my brothers because I thought they were really lucky to get to drive tractors all day. Of course, they had a different opinion of that. But they were sort of nobility in our family because they were participating in bringing in the income, and the work I did in the house and yard made no contribution to that. But then I left Kansas when I was about 18, and I had many experiences out in the world, and I learned that I could do things that men could do. So when I returned home in my mid-30s, I wound up helping my father. I was his sidekick for a while, and he began to look at me as a possible successor.
Mm-hmm. What brought you back to the farm?
Well, I made an unfortunate choice in husbands, and what I look up on now as a marital mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pregnant. I needed some help. So I went back home, and in order to pay my way, so to speak, I insisted on helping on the farm.
Mm-hmm. So you were a pregnant farmer.
I was.
How was that?
For a while there.
How was that rough?
Actually, it did get a little rough at one point. We had this old tractor that was loud and was a real rough ride. It was a smaller tractor. And I was doing work on that tractor one day when I started having cramps, and I realized I can't do this. This is one thing I can't do. I could only drive the big, giant four-wheel drive tractors where the wheels were taller than I was because the ride was smoother.
Mm-hmm. And then your son was born. Did that make it easier or hard? easier or harder to be a farmer with a newborn?
It made a huge difference. Of course, it was harder in some ways. My father wanted me, now that he understood that I could drive in a straight line, he wanted me to farm all the time and wanted me to take my son to the neighborhood babysitter who lived several miles away from us. And that woman did a great job, but I was a new mother, and I really wanted my son to be one of us, not one of them. So I would insist on working half-time at that point. But also, I was more motivated to stay there at that point because now there was this lineage. I wanted to raise my son among family and on the land that I had grown up on.
And was it important to your father that this farm stay in the family, that you remain farming people?
It was hugely important to him. As a matter of fact, his first commandment to us throughout my childhood was always, hang on to your land. And it hung over us our entire lives, whether or not we would have the mettle to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story of our relationship to our land and how that changed over time, and it went from a way of life to strictly a way of making money.
Mm-hmm. Of course, to keep land going, you have to have water, and so you need this aquifer. When did you first learn about the Ogallala Aquifer's depletion?
Farmers have actually known about it forever. All the way back to the turn of the last century, we've known that aquifer was finite. But as far as my personal knowledge of it, I think I became much more aware of it when I went back to farm with my father in my mid-30s, because I was one of his floodmen. I would go out there and change the sets on the irrigated pipe. At that time, we weren't using the center pivot sprinklers that travel around in a circle. We were flood irrigating our fields. And whenever I would knock open one of those pipe gates, the water would shoot out of there at such force that it felt almost dangerous to try to slice your hand through it. It was as if it might throw your arm back and dislocate your shoulder. I mean, it was that strong. We were irrigating at 1,000 gallons a minute. And I knew that there was no way the aquifer could sustain that much pumping over time.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Julene Baer. She's the author of the new memoir, The Ogallala Road, all about farming and depending on the depleting Ogallala Aquifer. When did people first realize that draining the aquifer was going to be an issue?
Well, people have been somewhat in denial for a long time, but I think since the 1980s, we started seeing stronger controls. Then they started insisting that we report how much water we used each season. And at first, we didn't even know how much water we used because they hadn't required us to have meters yet. Now, all of the wells in Kansas are required to have meters, and some of the other states are still behind us in that, but others are coming along. There's increased awareness all over the aquifer region. Everyone knows the writing is on the wall. Right now, the governor of Kansas has a task force going out, gathering input from stakeholders. And everyone's a stakeholder, really, who lives in Kansas because of the economy here is quite dependent on it. And they're trying to figure out what to do next. Of course, I have my ideas about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to those in a minute.
Okay.
If farmers, in your book, you say the farmers refer to Big Daddy. What are they talking about when they talk about Big Daddy?
Well, Big Daddy is the government, and that's what my dad used to say. I would complain about irrigating, and he would say, well, don't worry, Big Daddy will put in before it's too late. And he had reason to believe that because in his lifetime, the government regulations were stronger than they are now. We've managed to disempower Big Daddy.
Mm-hmm. So there was this sort of faith that if we were doing something that was wrong, Big Daddy would step in and make sure we didn't do too much damage.
Right. I mean, they were businessmen. They were trying to make a profit, my father and all of his neighbors. And as long as it was legal, they were going to do it. I mean, that is pretty much standard practice in our system.
Well, what is Big Daddy doing now? What kind of regulation is there around the Ogallala?
Well, Big Daddy cannot exactly regulate the Ogallala because...
By the way, I just love the fact that we're having a conversation using the term Big Daddy with a straight face.
Me too.
But we'll continue.
All right.
What is the regulation? I'm sorry for that digression.
Okay, yeah. Well, basically, Big Daddy is underwriting the demise of the aquifer by subsidizing crops such as corn. Corn is probably the most notorious crop that's unsuited for the region.
Mm-hmm.
It takes on an average about 14 inches of irrigation water to grow a crop of corn here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the thirstiest crops we grow, and there's a huge amount of it being grown now. Not only is it subsidized through the farm program, but the ethanol mandate is making the price, it's underpinning the price, and it has elevated the price by a lot of money. As a consequence, there's more corn acres today than ever before.
Now, you write that in Kansas, you're required to take advantage of your water rights or lose them. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, it used to be that way. The phrase was use it or lose it, and that has actually changed within
mm-hmm.
the last couple of years. The governor of Kansas has pushed through legislation that makes that no longer necessary, which is great. That's a wonderful improvement.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain what Eisenhower's Secretary of Agriculture meant when he told farmers to, quote, get big or get out?
Well, the idea was that, you know, production was going up because of the amount of fertilizers we're now using and so on. And if you wanted to make a profit in farming, you just had to farm more land. And that's what people did. The farms got bigger and bigger, and actually irrigation had the same sort of influence because it was costly to build irrigation systems, so you had to have the means to do that. And also irrigation increased your yields, so the prices went down because more grain was being produced, so you had to have more land.
Mm-hmm. And now the name Ogallala, that's a Sioux name, right?
Well, originally it came from the Oglala Sioux. There's a one less syllable in
uh-huh.
there.
That would have been
the
helpful.
Aquifer, yeah, the aquifer was named after the town Ogallala, Nebraska, which was named after the Oglala Sioux. And the word originally meant spread throughout, which seems appropriate because the aquifer is spread throughout such a large region.
Mm-hmm. You refer to Native Americans a lot in the book. What kinds of lessons can we take from their farming practices?
Yes, I got really interested in the Cheyenne Indians where I grew up because so many books that have been written about my region don't even mention the Indians. And it enlivened the landscape for me to think about the Indians that used to live on that water. There was no way to live there without those live streams. So going back 10,000 years, the humankind has depended on those waters. And I also I was influenced by the Hopi tribe in Arizona. I was able to visit them once when I was a young woman because I had a friend who helped the spokesperson for the Hope Villa people, and that's the most traditional village in the Hopi reservation. And they were fighting this Bureau of Indian Affairs well and water tower that they wanted to put in. And they knew that if they allowed that well to go in, that it would drain their spring and they wouldn't have water anymore and they wouldn't be able to live where they'd been living for the last 600 years. So that was something they were just forcibly, you know, they were willing to lie down in front of bulldozers if necessary in order to prevent that from happening. So I make the comparison in my book. Here were the Hopi doing everything they could to prevent the government from giving them a way to access water easily. And here we were taking government subsidies to drain our aquifer. So two civilizations could really not be any different.
Well, it's an amazing topic and a lot I certainly didn't know. And I certainly think that we have a lot to be concerned about with our draining aquifer. So thank you again. I've been speaking with author Julien Baer. Her book is called The Ogallala Road. It's published by Penguin. Julien, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.